just freestyle recording something while it's still in my mind. So the area that I live in, operate out of, run my business is in Texas, Central Texas to be exact. This is Trump country. This is, as a culture, we carry weapons. It's very conservative by nature. Now, I haven't lived here my whole life. I was born in Beaumont, Texas, in this area, and then ended up in Arkansas, which is where I really consider being born. But I actually was a baby. Then taken to Arkansas. But I grew up early in Arkansas, boom. My dad was an early, what we used to call computer programmers. Now they call coders. And he got a job in the oil fields of Alaska. And so off to Beverly, right, we head to Alaska. And while we're in Alaska, there's an oil boom. And then around, I don't know, I'm 15, 16, there's an oil crash in like 86, 85, in that time range. So we end up moving back to Texas. My dad's, where my family's from. And so I go to the Army. Long story short, I get out of the Army. I come back to my home area. And this is where I own rental properties. And it's a border state. And a problem that we have, or can be a problem, is people, you have a two-bedroom house and you're going to try to, you need to rent it. And the rule of thumb is one person per room. You might make an exception. You can, but on a two-bedroom small house like that, it's a real, you can't have 10 people living in a two-bedroom house just because that's what they can afford. From an investment perspective, I'm not talking about you going out and buying a two-bedroom house and you cram in all your family members. That's your prerogative. Cool, if that's what you want to do. Have grandma live with you, your uncle. But from an investor's point of view, the wear and tear and the damages, and the doors open, the toilets flushed, every component that makes an investment. When you're an investor, you own the inside, you own the 2x4s, the drywall, the flooring, that's, you're responsible for that stuff. And it is, a consideration, just like any other business. If you're in a food service business, you can only have enough hamburger patties for hamburgers ordered. Anything more than that, and you're losing money. So every business has its constraints. And the other day, I'm at one of my houses, and a renter had asked me, they called me and said, my uncle needs a place to stay. Can he stay here for a couple months? Right. Now, as a business owner, what you're doing is you're having a customer say, hey, I realize this is your rules, but I don't want to follow those rules. What do you say? And this is where you, as a landlord, have to make decisions. Are you stern and, these are the rules, period, no exception. Because if this wasn't an Hispanic family, if it was a, just any other family, it wouldn't occur to me. But this is like real things. Like, we're in a border state. This really happens where people will bring over family members. And I have, there's a property by one of my properties. These are things that people say, I don't hear anybody talking about in real estate because it's such a politically divisive issue. But I'm just talking about it from a purely business standpoint. Like, you don't want to rent a house to 20 college kids. I would never do it under any circumstance, even if it helped those people go to college. You see what I'm saying? Just from a purely business perspective, I can't do that. I would lose money on the property. The wear and tear on the property would be excessive, and your maintenance costs would go up. Your taxes are going up. Not to mention, many cities have ordinances against this. Like, cities in the South have passed ordinances where no more than two unrelated people can live in a house. Meaning a girlfriend and boyfriend, yes, but you can't add a third friend to share the rent. It doesn't work. They have city ordinances against it. Why? Because people will take your property and move in 15 people and challenge you to do anything about it. This is a real thing. And it's funny because it, you know, you don't hear it talked about in your guru courses. You know, Grant Cardone will mention it every once in a while, but it doesn't just happen in the Hispanic community. It happens in the Somalian community. It happens in the white community. So as an investor, if you're self-managing property, these are real world issues that are actual political battleground issues. These are things that are happening in our country. So as an investor, as a person who is trying to make cash flow, generate return, find yield, find good deals to take money and put it into, you are in the news and the history that's being made. Like inside of these real world things, regardless of what you may think, doesn't matter. You could be completely for open borders. Anybody can come in, let them do whatever, get all free. Like you could be totally for that. But if you're the landlord, you still have to write the check. And so these are real world things. These things happen. In 2015, was it? No, it wasn't 2015. The BP oil spill, remember that? Like this is a real world thing in an area where I live and in money, in a stock that I have money invested in. It's national news. There's people coming out now. They're pissed, they're right, environmentalists. All these people are coming out because of this situation. And you're right there. And what you see happening in front of you is the money flow. It's your life colliding with history and news, and it's happening right in front of you. And you can watch it. And then you can wait. And you can time your entries into this, to play this game, to be involved in this cash flow game of buying undervalued assets at the right price, holding them over a period of time, understanding from time to time there's a maintenance cost to be paid. I had a kid's like business costs money. Business costs money. Supplies cost money. Being an investor is like owning a business. And so I have money invested in like in total, it's like 53 different assets. Each one of these assets is just a little bit different. And there's real shit that happens on TV, on the news, around us, in the world, that actually affects the movement of these assets that I own. And so I follow. I observe. 2015 oil crisis, I'm right there. I live in Texas. A lot of people being laid off. Oil falls from $100 and something a share. Now, a company I own shares in was called Seadrill. SDRL was the ticker symbol. It was trading for $50 something a share at one point. Well, they had leveraged the shit out of themselves, took all the money, and had drilling rigs built. They borrowed money. They sold shares and raised money. They sold bonds and raised money. They took all the money, put drilling rigs, 100+ drilling rigs all over the world, just sucking oil out of the money and then paying out all the money to the shareholders, paying like $1 a share a dividend at $30 a share. I mean, it was ridiculous. And so I own thousands of shares of this company. And every time they'd pay a dividend, I'd get like $3,000. It's beautiful. Well, oil goes from $100 and something a barrel all the way to below $30 a barrel. And all around me, oil riggers are being laid off, oil fields are slowing down, real estate prices are falling. And the Balkan, the shale, and all these areas, North Dakota, and Texas, and Oklahoma, Louisiana, and then all the service people that service those people, and the car delivery services that deliver to those people, and then they start laying off. And I lose 2 or 3 renters. So right in front of me, I see the money flow. Oil's plummeting. It doesn't take a genius or a scientist or a rocket scientist to realize if the price of oil goes below the cost to actually dig it out of the ground, it can't stay there. Because people will stop digging it. There'll be no more exploration of oil. They'll stop. They're not going to lose money for very long to pump. You're not going to sell a product for $1 that costs you $2 to make it. You'll just stop selling it at some point. You might take a loss for a while, but then you'll stop. What happens when you stop and you remove supply? Prices stabilize, ultimately prices go up. That's the money flow. And so as you live your life and you observe and you see these things happening in front of you, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. What does that mean? What does that mean? And you could read and study and read up on that and say, well, what could I buy? Well, that might have a direct impact on high yield stocks. It does. And so if they do raise interest rates and they do bang these stocks down, maybe you'll be ready to buy some. Finally. And so I began to just watch and observe the money flow and pick and find my targets. I would just be a person who saved money. Well, first made money, second saved money, lived on half of what I made, and invest the difference. And I would just always be about the business of trying to invest in $5, $1,000 increments, in $10,000 increments, and in $15,000 increments. And I would be about the business of going broke. I'd make the money, I'd save the money. As soon as I got the money, I'd invest the money. I'm now broke again. And I would just stay broke. And we lived on my wife's salary and invested all of mine. And that was the key. That was the trick. And then watching and studying the money flow. So you wake up and you look. I'm not trying to watch the news for a political opinion. I don't care. I'm trying to watch what is happening in the money flow. Is there anything I need to be worried about? Is there anything I need to know? And let's say something's happening and some people seem worried. I'll say, okay, why are they worried? And then I'll go and read and I'll ask myself, has this ever happened before? Because if it's never happened before, already I discount it. Because all my life, I've heard the market's going to crash, the country's going to go bankrupt, they're going to drop nuclear bombs on us. Haven't you? When Obama took charge, we were all going to die. When Trump won, we were doomed. When Bill Clinton won, I remember my parents thinking we should move to Canada. There's always a segment of the population, and there's always a piece in all of us that sees doom and gloom. And here's what I saw. There were basically three keys to money. Make money, save half, live on the rest, invest the half. There was just three things I needed to do. Make money, live on less than I make, and invest the difference. And just stay broke. That was it. But I was doing it as a business. I'm watching the world go around me, and I'm allocating my money to position itself so that when the world corrects itself, and it always has, my entire life, the world has not ended. We were not bombed. There's not been a zombie land. There has been, Y2K did not happen. Everything that's ever been predicted that was going to destroy me never happened. And so there's never been a time where it was profitable on fear and doom. It's not going to happen. No one's going to run. Bitcoin may go up. But it won't be because the freaking world ends and we're somehow going to go to a made-up digital currency by someone we don't even know. It just sounds crazy. Listen to it. That's not how the world works. You don't get rewarded for nothing. It's never worked that way. Never. There is no example of it. And so if something's never happened, I don't bet on it. Does that mean people can't make money betting on things that have never happened? No, they can. There are people who've gotten rich off zombies or the apocalypse or preaching, teaching yoga. Like, you can get rich in America literally doing anything if you're committed to the process. And how you choose to get rich and what you do to make your money and how you make your money, I don't care. I don't even have an answer for you. I don't know what you should do to make money. I just made money with where I was, with what I had around me. I did the best I could. I lived on half and I invested the rest. It's super simple. And that was the strategy. And that's exactly how Ford did it. It's exactly how Sam Walton did it. It's exactly like they just made money and then they didn't spend it. Reinvesting into their business was investing. Investing doesn't mean just stocks. Investing doesn't just mean real estate. I met a guy who made his money through investing in storage facilities. His family had 1,100 doors. I don't know, what do you pay, $60, $150 for a storage room? They had 1,100 of them. Do the math. That's a lot of money for a very simple business. So the best play for him may be continuously updating the storage facility, growing that business. That may be the investment. But at my house today, the couple that had asked me if they can move in there, it's either their cousin or their uncle. I'm over there and he was there yesterday outside, and the whole time he's working. I watched him, he cleaned the grill. He was cleaning the windows with a bucket and a wash rag. Like, this guy's like, I don't know, older than me, in his mid-50s. And I could just tell he doesn't speak English. I mean, he looks Hispanic. They're Hispanic. They're legal, I assume. I don't know. I don't ask. And he's cleaning the property. I've never seen any renter do what he's doing. And so, I don't say anything. I'm working on the house next door. And then I go about my business. I had some painting to do, some little touch-ups. I'm fixing a listed on Zillow. I go back there the next day to mow the yard. He's outside hand washing the cars. So he washes his car, like the renter's cars, his and her cars. I know what they drive. I don't know where they're at. It's like a Sunday or Saturday. He cleans their cars. And I mean, really good too. Like, he's out there, vacuum cleaner, scrubbing it. So remember I said, as a landlord, you got to make decisions. And the reason you wouldn't let multiple people live in your house isn't because you want to be a racist. It's not about that. It's just a financial, I'm not here to subsidize you. I'm sorry about your problem, but my role in life isn't to subsidize people. It's to produce the best product and demand almost the best price. I always say best product, best price. Like, I want to, you can't have a Lexus because you don't actually have the money for a Lexus. So the product that I produce isn't that. Whether they do, if another landlord wants to facilitate that, I'm all for it. But here's now, this situation, he's doing the exact opposite. Like, he's taking care of the property better than I've seen anyone ever do. Which makes the reason for the rule seem okay. Like, that's not the complete reason then, right? Like, I mean, it's part of the reason, but there are exceptions to the rule, right? That's what I'm trying to say. Like, even the rules that you make in your own life that you make for a logical reason. It's not that you're being a dick. It's not that, you don't like someone. You just decide, hey, look, I don't go out to clubs and go drinking as a normal way of life. I'm not mad at you if you do. That's just not my deal. I might go once a year. And so if a person does that all the time, you might just say, I'm not doing that, bro. Like, I'm under no obligation to party with my friends if I'm done partying. And so you can set rules and boundaries in your life, but you got to know when you can break your own rules, right? That maybe there are exceptions from time to time, or maybe in this one particular case, you look the other way, but you keep an eye on it. That's what I'm guessing on this case. That as a general rule, yeah, that's my rule. But in this situation, this one time, and here's the terms and it's non-negotiable in 60 days. Like, this is your one chance to bend those rules. You will not get number two. And if it's broken, then it's on you. I like gave you a chance. So that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know. Maybe you're a landlord and you could hit me up and give me your feedback.